Wars of Doctor Who. Star Wars of Doctor Who. Star Wars of Doctor Who.
His name is Rob.
His name is Rob.
He knows his Wookiees from his Daleks. Listen now.
Listen now.
Hear the Force challenge the TARDIS. Get your blue milk and jelly babies while we see which drives you crazy. Star Wars or Doctor Who.
Hey everyone, and welcome to Who Wars, the podcast for those among us who just can't decide between Star Wars and Doctor Who. This episode, however, is all about Doctor Who. Tonight I'll be looking at the first half of Doctor Who Series 8 with my team members, Kate and Lex. Say hi, guys.
Hello.
Hey, guys.
Okay, Series 8. Why don't we start with some quick initial feelings that we had going into the series so we give people at home a yardstick for where our heads were at going into this. I, for example, was very excited about Peter Capaldi coming to the role. I'd loved him in past movies and TV shows. I knew about his love for the show. And I instantly recognised that as an older guy, you know, we might have a more traditional sort of Doctor coming back, no longer the young and dashing boyfriend type, but something, you know, a bit different. But what about you guys? What did you think going in before you'd seen any of Series 8?
You want to go first, Kate?
Yeah, I can go first. For Season 8, I was really excited, but I was a little apprehensive just because I haven't really seen much of the classic Who. So that, just judging on that, I was a little skeptical. Yeah, that's about it.
And Lex?
I have seen a little bit of the classic Doctor Who, so that in particular is why I was excited about Peter Capaldi. I kind of shielded myself from knowing anything about Series 8 before I started watching it. So, well, I didn't know anything other than I knew that they thought that the public wasn't really convinced that Peter Capaldi could be the Doctor, because most people haven't seen the classic Doctor Who. And so I knew that they were going to try really, really hard, and that's why I felt confident going into Series 8. I knew I was going to like it because of that.
Yeah, Peter Capaldi was certainly a very different kind of choice for the Doctor, but I'm so glad they made it. Anyway, without any further ado, let's rip into the first episode of Series 8, Deep Breath. Now, this episode received largely positive reviews. The Guardian responded well to the episode, labelling Capaldi's performance as intimidating, bold and unsettling, and they praised Ben Wheatley's direction in the episode's tenser moments, calling it the stuff of true terror and wonderment. However, not all reviews were positive. Forbes actually panned the story as strangely recessive, unheroic and dull, calling both Capaldi and Coleman's characters insipid.
Ouch.
Yeah. So, did we like it? Was this the best of Doctor Who, or were Capaldi and Coleman insipid? Who wants to go first?
I guess I'll go first. Insipid is harsh. It wasn't bland or uninteresting. I mean, Peter Capaldi and Jenna Coleman can't be that completely. That's just extreme. But it does have its moments where I would have liked some more from the characters, but that's just too harsh.
Yeah, I agree with that. I would say it's somewhere in the middle between the two. I don't think it was maybe the best, and I don't think it was worse.
Yeah, I definitely don't think they were insipid. I don't understand where that came from at all, from that reviewer. and as to it being the best of Doctor Who, well, I'm guilty as writing into Doctor Who magazine and calling it the best debut of any of the modern Doctors, so I quite liked it. I thought it was just a really good, solid opening episode. I guess opening episodes aren't meant to do a lot. They're just meant to introduce the new Doctor. And I just thought it was a good one. Maybe the extra running time helped. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I'm always for more episode time, definitely. I hardly even noticed, though. It felt like the same kind of pace to me, so I was just as enthralled as usual. I didn't even notice it was longer, really. It was a good episode. It was good.
Agreed.
Yeah, to me it was like when I saw the first Lord of the Rings movie and I came out and someone said that was almost 3 hours, and I thought, oh wow, it felt like an hour and a half.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, in this episode, the Doctor was very confused about his new look, looking at this old face and thinking, who's frowned these frowns, I think the line might have been. And of course, the 10th Doctor met a man called Caecilius in the Fires of Pompeii, who was played by Peter Capaldi. Do we think Stephen Moffat's going to try and tie that in somehow, that he was maybe thinking of that man and so regenerated into his look? Or do we think it might have just been something for that first episode and now we're not going to worry about it?
I think we're going to see it come into play again.
I think we should. I mean, I wouldn't hold Stephen Moffat to something like that, but he certainly has led us into thinking that putting in a line like that is intriguing, and I don't, it could just end there. I liked that there was a possibility that we might have actually learned something new about the Doctor and his regenerations, that in fact maybe every time he regenerates he's just using a face from somebody in his past. So I don't know if he's going to go any more into that, but just that alone, that kind of fact that we learn about the Doctor was great.
Yeah, which is interesting because Colin Baker, the Sixth Doctor, was in a Fifth Doctor story. He shot the Doctor at one point, so I wonder if Peter Davison was thinking of Colin Baker at that point.
Yeah, probably. Undoubtedly.
All right. Now, I guess one of the other cool things in this episode was a cameo by Matt Smith. He popped up at the end to let Clara know everything was all right and the Doctor would be scared and to look after him. How did you feel when you saw Matt Smith reappear in Doctor Who?
I liked it.
Mm-hmm. Loved it. I think, like I said before, they're trying really hard this season to get people convinced that this is the Doctor, and putting in Matt Smith definitely helped. It was tough to see him go, but it was great.
Yeah, we all.
Yeah, it was a nice send-off.
It was. We all see our favourites go, and as I was saying on Twitter this past week, if I was like a lot of modern Who fans, I'd still be lamenting that the Fifth Doctor is no longer the Doctor.
Indeed.
And then, of course, the episode wrapped up with Missy. We were introduced to this woman called Missy. She refers to the Doctor as her boyfriend. She's in heaven, apparently, the afterlife, somewhere like that. What were you thinking when that scene came on?
I was confused.
Yeah, me too. I was so confused, and I'm still confused.
Yeah. What came to my mind right away is that I think it's something with holograms or something like that. I don't know.
Ooh.
Oh, why holograms?
I don't know. I just have a feeling.
Okay, yeah. Lex.
The Missy mystifies me. I don't know what's going on, if this really is some kind of heaven sphere. I mean, it definitely appears that way, but Doctor Who has never really gone into that before. Totally new area. I just have a theory that she's going to be evil in some way. Because, you know, curl hair and the lipstick. Yeah.
Definitely. Too powerful.
She's going to go bad a little bit.
Well, there's lots of rumors out there. The rumors are that she's maybe the master, now the mistress, so she's Missy. There's rumors that she's maybe the Valyard, who popped up in a very old series of Doctor Who back in 1986. There's rumors she's the Rani, one of the Doctor's great female adversaries. There's rumors that she is somehow Clara in the future. There are other rumors besides. Have you bought into any of the rumors, and do any of them sound convincing to you?
Those are delicious rumors. Convincing? I don't know. You never know. You never know what's going to happen.
I like the master one because, like, Mistress Missy, I think that one probably makes the most sense, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah? Do you think the master would refer to the Doctor as his or her boyfriend, though?
Hey, he might. You never know.
Well, you know, there's another rumor that I didn't mention a moment ago, that it's actually River Song.
Yeah.
That could be interesting.
But, I mean, they're husband and wife. Boyfriend is not good enough for River.
I guess we're just going to have to wait and see what happens in, I think, probably the last two episodes of this series.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Alrighty. Shall we move on to Into the Dalek?
Yeah.
Okay, Into the Dalek. Now, this also received largely positive reviews. Terry Ramsey of the Daily Telegraph gave the episode 4 out of 5. He praised Capaldi. He said, "It may be hard to believe in a good Dalek, but after Saturday night, it's easy to believe there will be a good Doctor," which was a nice comment. Forbes, however, gave another negative review of the episode. I'm getting the feeling Forbes might not like the other show. It criticised the Dalek's appearance so soon after Capaldi's entrance, saying it felt like the BBC have a lack of confidence in the public accepting Capaldi as the Doctor, and so they brought back the Daleks very quickly. Now, what do we think about that, I guess, initially? Were the Daleks brought back too soon here?
Maybe.
Yeah, I think they need to start limiting the number of times they bring in a Dalek. It is getting a bit much. I love Daleks, though. I love seeing them, but time to start limiting.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I was surprised to see them in an episode too, but I guess it wasn't full-blown Daleks, if I can put it that way. I mean, we saw a few of them on screen at one time, but mostly it was a single Dalek, much like the Christopher Eccleston episode, Dalek. There were very many similarities to that episode. Did you guys pick up on that as well?
It was different, though. It was different enough. They were helping it this time. It was, like, a much larger focus, so that was okay.
I also like the Star Trek references.
I'm having a mental blank. Was there a Star Trek reference?
Yeah, well, the title, Into the Dalek, and then he actually says Into Darkness at one point.
Oh.
And that was the title of the last movie. Nice. And they said, I think they say resistance is futile at one point, too.
Huh.
I thought that was funny. Sorry, Rob.
No, that's quite okay.
Much appreciated on this podcast, I think.
Okay, and of course, in this episode, we had a character called Journey Blue. Now, what do we make of her? She's a soldier. Is she related to Danny Pink in some way, having a color for a surname? What did we think about that?
I definitely think something's going on. I've looked online about that, and there are some theories, and there's one that I loved, is that Missy has somehow thrown Danny Pink back into the world, I guess, and that Danny Pink was originally Journey Blue's brother, something like that.
Oh, I like that. That was really, really clever,
yeah. So I think they just gotta do something with that. It's too coincidental for that last name of the colors thing to just be a conversation piece. I think that's one theory that I saw online, that it was just a conversation piece. I think the line is that Clara says to Journey Blue, "Oh, that's funny that your last name is Blue. I just met somebody with the last name of Pink." Yeah. So some people just think it's just a conversation a bit, but I don't think so. They've got to make something out of that.
Yeah. Now I'm thinking, is it possibly Journey Blue's brother from you're thinking from the ship when she got rescued, but he didn't, or did he maybe?
That's the one.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll have to wait and see how that plays out, because obviously we've met Orson Pink as well, and there's all sorts of stuff going on. I think these last two episodes might even get a bit confusing when they try and unravel all of this.
Yeah. I hope so. Okay. I like it when it's confusing.
Absolutely. Although then everyone will be online saying, "Oh, Stephen Moffat, ah."
Yep.
Now, we saw Missy again in this episode. This time she was with Gretchen, one of the characters, after she had sacrificed herself. And this time she was at a table laden with cakes and other delights, you know, maybe things that Gretchen might like. I'm not sure. And to see that happen again in this episode, did you get the feeling, oh, is this going to happen every episode now? Like every episode someone will die and end up with Missy?
Yeah, kind of.
That would have been nice, simpler. But no, they made her disappear for a while afterwards.
That's like, right.
She didn't appear in Robert of, Robot of Sherwood, I don't think. And Listen? I don't think so. Yeah, so it was like a teaser, and we kind of all forgot about it for a little bit, and then they just brought it back. In some ways, it's good that they did that. I mean, to keep it all mysterious.
Absolutely. So, overall, what did we think of this episode? If you're giving it a mark out of 5 or out of 10, what would you give it, and what were your top-level sort of thoughts on it all?
Okay, what do you think?
Okay. For me, out of these 6 that we're talking about today, not my favorite. I don't know. I just like some of the other ones better. But I like the theme of it about, you know, the Daleks being good or bad and so forth.
It was important in terms of getting to know this particular doctor. You know, like, am I a good man? This one apparently is very insightful. And, yeah, in terms of, I don't know, like 1 to 10, I would give it an 8, I think.
Okay, that's pretty high.
Yeah.
I think it certainly wasn't as good as Deep Breath, and there are episodes coming that I like more, but it certainly wasn't a disaster or anything. I'd certainly be up around at least 7 out of 10 myself.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's understandable.
Okay. Well, let's move on to a story you just mentioned there, Robot of Sherwood, our third episode of the series. Now, this, critically, the reception was a bit mixed. Dan Martin of The Guardian praised the writing and acting, but criticised the more minor role of the Doctor in the episode, and the length, which didn't do the mythology as he saw it justice. But Patrick Mulcan in the Radio Times called it a superb, witty, heartwarming encounter between two heroes, praising Mark Gatiss's hugely elegant, witty script that delivered a coherent plot. But Neela Debnath of The Independent was quite critical of the episode, calling it a dull and nonsensical disappointment. She thought it to be an oddly pieced together episode that didn't make much sense with no silver linings. So I guess this was a very, a Mark Gatiss episode, which seemed to polarise people like no other episode seemed to. People either really, really, really love them or really, really, really hate them. So yes. How did we see it? Did we see a fun romp or did we see something dull and nonsensical?
I loved this one. This was one of my favorite ones of Series 8 so far.
Okay. Yeah, I remember really liking it too when I saw it. All right. And then I got online and was kind of disappointed to see how everybody was just smashing it down.
All right. Well, Kate, why did you like it so much?
I've always loved the Robin Hood story. So just to see it on the Doctor Who playing field, it was really neat to see that.
Okay. And Lex?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that they brought in this character from my childhood. I liked it, but it's like Mark Gatiss. I thought that his other episodes were better. This one wasn't a standout episode of the ones that he has done from the past. But it was funny. It was a good time.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a nice segue into talking about Mark Gatiss stories, I guess, in general. We've got The Unquiet Dead, The Idiot's Lantern, Victory of the Daleks, Night Terrors, Cold War, The Crimson Horror, and then Robot of Sherwood. Looking back, are you generally fans of his stories or not? Are any of those other stories ones that have stood out to you or that you've really loved, or are they ones you've really hated?
So the one I really loved was The Idiot's Lantern. I liked that one a lot. And the one I didn't like was Night Terrors. The rest are in the middle.
Okay, well, take us through those two. What was it about
Idiot's... Well, not counting Idiot's... Robot Sherwood.
Well, what was it about Idiot's Lantern that you
liked?
Well,
it just... It had that... I liked that fun... I liked the era that it was in and...
Me too.
The costumes.
The costumes. Yeah, that first scene when they're coming out of the TARDIS and jumping on the motorcycle.
Yes. That was amazing.
Let me guess. You like David Tennant's hair in that episode?
Well, I didn't mention it.
Doesn't that go... Yeah, it goes without saying in every episode.
Yeah, I was just watching that episode recently. I mean, and they had some great lines about Elvis and there's like keep it in the fridge, something like it. It was smooth. It was real great. I liked that episode.
I love that era. I see it's the eras that I like. I like those episodes, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned Night Terrors and not liking it. Why was that?
It was disturbing. I don't like the ones that are super disturbing with dolls and clowns and no.
That's one of the episodes. Yeah, well, that's one of the episodes of his that I didn't like either, but not so much, well, sort of because it was disturbing. I thought it was just really try hard. I thought it was trying too hard to, like, scare people to the point where I was like, oh, go away, this is silly. So
yeah, it didn't own up to all that build up. But yeah. I liked the dolls. I liked the dolls. They were creepy, but I liked them.
No, no.
No, okay.
I didn't.
Sorry. Sent some kind of trauma there.
All right. And Lex, out of the Gator stories, are there ones you like or hate?
The Crimson Horror.
A like or hate?
Love.
Love. Excellent.
Yeah, because, you know, people in red, that's different. And it's a poison that makes you paralyzed, kind of turn into wood. It was really new to me. That was brand new concepts. I loved that one. And that mother-daughter tension, it was uplifting. It was cool. That's my favorite, Gatiss.
And I think they did some good location shooting on that one, too.
Yeah, it was great scenic shots.
Well, for me, I talked about this in my review of this story. I'm all over the place with him. Stuff like Victory of the Daleks, I just can't stand. Whereas something like The Crimson Horror I liked. I think Unquiet Dead is quite good as well.
Mm.
And with Robot of Sherwood, I erred on the side of it being a romp. And so I took it in kind and I thought, okay, that was a romp. I wasn't meant to think too much about it. It was fun.
Yeah. It was definitely a romp episode. Yes. It was bold of them to bring in a mythological figure like that, and I'm glad they did. Not many episodes are like that, I don't think. Well, yeah, not many.
Yeah. Now, is Clara a little a little much in this episode with her crush on Robin Hood. Like, she's been growing up, she's been getting more mature, she's telling the Doctor what to do, but in this episode, all of a sudden, she's just, like, really crushing on, you know, Robin Hood.
Mm-hmm.
Asking you here as two ladies, was that realistic, or did it take her character backwards? I mean, I've seen people say both about the story.
Yeah.
Well, I think, like we said before, how it's kind of, you know, it's a story we grew up with, and so to actually meet someone that you've read stories about your whole life, that would be, I can see why she acted that way.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I saw why she was acting that way, but I think they did make it too heavy. Like, there is some real romantic tension going on, and I didn't like that, seeing, you know, in the background, they were really focusing on, like, the epic love of Robin and Marion. So, like, that was just contradictory and didn't seem right, that they would allow such heavy, you know, crush romantic stuff and at the same time try to weave in that love story. So it just didn't work.
And Clara, of course, has probably just left Danny Pink a few hours earlier.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't like it.
That's true.
It's shades of Amy Pond perhaps trying to jump on Matt Smith the night before her wedding.
Right. Yeah, that too. I know somebody who stopped watching Doctor Who because of that, unfortunately. You have to be careful with stuff like this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, look, for me, it made me feel quite oddly towards her character on the show. You know, obviously I didn't stop watching, but I thought, oh, that's weird.
Yeah. Yep. You definitely know? Yeah. Keeps you on your toes, like, trying to figure stuff out character-wise.
That's right. Now, at the end of this episode, there was a big fight between Robin and the Sheriff, where what was meant to happen is the Sheriff was meant to be beheaded. And when he would be beheaded, we'd see that he was a robot, so he would be the titular robot of Sherwood. Now, unfortunately, that was a week where ISIS had beheaded another journalist in the real world, like tragic news, and so the BBC thought, oh, we're not going to have a beheading in this episode, and they took it out. Now, the way the fight was edited looked very cool, and I couldn't even see how you could have even fitted a beheading into the fight. But what do we think about the DVD release? Now, should that have the fight as it was originally intended? And, you know, obviously revealing he's a robot, the robot of Sherwood. Or should it just stay as it was transmitted? I guess there are pros and cons for each. What do we think?
I hope they put it back in the DVD. It's messed up to mess with the story that much. You know, they left out a big part, so I hope they put it back in for our future Doctor Who watchers.
Yeah, especially since he's a robot, right? It would be different if it was human, obviously, but if it's a robot, I don't see a problem with it.
Yeah, it's a robot.
Yeah. I feel much the same. I was talking about it at the time, you know, because obviously this was intended to be in the episode. And it's just a quirk of timing that caused it to get changed in the first place. You know, if it had been shown a week before, it would have been okay and no one would have ever said anything about it. So, to me, I think, I'd like to see it reinstated too. I hope it is.
Yeah.
All right, now moving on to the episode, I think, without preempting anything that I think blew everyone away thus far, Listen received acclaim from TV critics and audiences alike, with many praising Moffat's script, McKinnon's direction, and performances from Capaldi, Coleman, and Anderson. Now, labelling the episode as possibly Stephen Moffat's most terrifying episode to date, Neela Debnath, yes, the same Neela Debnath who was criticising an episode a moment ago, praised Coleman's performances, saying that Clara was back on top of her game, and she called it the most powerful episode of Doctor Who from Moffat to date. A moving piece of drama, as well as a terrifying piece of Saturday night television. Radio Times labelled the episode as the most conceptual episode in the entire history of Doctor Who, and stated, "You're blowing our minds, Moffat." So, did we like it? Were our minds blown? Or did reviewers maybe get a little carried away in their first flush of excitement for this episode?
Well, all of the above. There is such a build-up to this episode. It was terrifying. Commercials and the actual episode itself, all the way through. It was mind-bendy and thrilling. It was that way all the way through. All of the above.
Kate?
I thought it maybe did have a little too much hype. Like, I thought it was just going to be terrifying, but I didn't find it scary. I found it suspenseful, but I didn't find it scary like I thought I would.
Yeah, I think scary was an odd sort of way to put it. I guess some people might have been scared by the thing under the bedspread, like whatever yes. it was mm-hmm. was meant to be.
That would be me. Yeah, me. Yeah.
Oh. But
I have a question for you guys.
Yes.
Have you ever had that nightmare?
Oh.
Of a thing under the bedspread?
Yeah, grabbing your foot.
I knew what you meant. Actually, I don't know if I have. It doesn't come to my mind if I have.
It's more like I haven't had a nightmare of that. It's just when I go to
bed. I have never had that.
When I go to bed at night, like I'd be sure to have all my limbs on top of the bed so nothing could reach over and get me. That, but that not a nightmare?
Oh,
okay. Yeah. So not really, I guess.
Yeah, maybe I've thought about things under the bed in general, but maybe not so much grabbing me.
That's never been something that's concerned me, so I thought that was a little weird. But
yeah.
Maybe that's just me.
I guess growing up in Australia, I would think more about maybe a big snake under my bed or something.
A big snake? Yeah. Oh, does that actually happen? Oh.
Of course it does.
In your house?
Well, yeah, depending on where you live and depending on the time of year. Yeah, absolutely. Snakes can come into
your
house.
Well, I mean, there's rattlesnakes and stuff here, but they're never in the houses.
Okay.
I'd freak out.
Ever in my life.
So you're both canceling travel
plans
now, I guess.
Yeah, that was a tangent, wasn't it?
No, that's fine. That's what it's all about. Everyone listening has seen the episode. They're looking for, you know, our other insights, such as, you know, snakes under the bed.
Snakes! Hey, that'd be a great title for an episode.
Yeah.
Snakes under the bed.
Well, we had dinosaurs on a spaceship. That was close.
Oh, my
God. There you go.
Yeah, that has to be a name of an episode soon. Has to be.
Now, this was a very reverential episode. When the 12th Doctor woke up in the TARDIS, he mentioned Sontarans perverting the course of human history to Orson Pink. That was, of course, repeating the first words of the 4th Doctor in Robot, which was itself quoting the 3rd Doctor in The Time Warrior. There are similar nods to other stories within the dialogue. The Doctor states there is nothing to hear, not a click or a tick. That's the 3rd Doctor talking in Death to the Daleks. And the episode's final line, when Clara's whispering to the young Doctor in his bed, she says, "Fear makes companions of us all." That line was originally spoken by the 1st Doctor in the 3rd episode of the very first Doctor Who story. So, do we like all these nods to the past for the older fans? Or do you think, you know, as newer fans you're getting left out if you don't get the references? Or how do you feel when you hear about these things and you either get them or you're told about them later and think, oh, I wish I had known that?
I'm curious what Kate thinks, because you haven't watched the... Are you planning on watching the classics, Kate?
Maybe.
Maybe. Okay, so maybe. Interesting.
They're hard to watch.
Yeah. Yeah, they're different. It's a whole different speed of things.
It's like the classic Star Trek.
To watch. I could only... when I started watching the classic Who, I could only watch it when I was, like, at the gym. I had to be doing something else at the time. I have to admit that. So, yeah, I get what you mean. Yeah.
So under the references, when you hear them,
but yeah,
what do you think?
I like it.
I love
it. I think something like Doctor Who just spans the decades like that, and it's nice to tie everything in together.
Yeah, very important. We have to give nods like this to the past. I mean, that's what it's all about, this whole 50-year span. We have to have some kind of unification of
exactly.
things, I think. And hey, you're not... hurt by these references if you
otherwise it could just be any show.
Yeah So it's all good for anybody watching it.
Yeah mm-hmm. Now I get it now, but when we think about Clara talking to the young Doctor and saying fear makes companions of us all, I guess we're meant to think that when he says that as an older man in the first Doctor Who story, that it's cause he's maybe remembering Clara. And, you know, a lot of people have accused Stephen Moffat of territory marking in this episode by making Clara do things with the Doctor's backstory. I mean, she's already done an awful lot with his backstory when she got split into fragments mm-hmm. and went off and helped all the Doctors throughout history. But here, she's doing even more. She's back with the Doctor in a barn on Gallifrey. And I guess this leads to two questions. Is Moffat territory marking when he does this? And do we like knowing more about the Doctor, or should he remain a bit more mysterious?
Okay, so there are a lot of aspects of that I could respond to. But But to start off, what you said about Clara and the influence that she's had on the Doctor's life so far, it's amazing about all of that, that they've given her that influence. And it's too bad that she's not more of a dominant character than she is, because she has so much influence. I think they should be giving her more depth, and never, like, the possibility of being insipid. That just, I don't know, so more should be given to her. I've said that in my other contributions to your podcast. So, yeah, I think it's great. And what else was I going to say? What was the last part that you said?
Do we like knowing more about the Doctor? Like, you know, they didn't show his face and they didn't have him speak. And I guess we didn't get a lot, but we feel like we got something. But was it too much?
I don't think it was too much.
Okay. And Kate, how do you feel?
I think he's a writer and he's doing what he's supposed to be doing by writing. Yeah, that's about it for that question.
It's his right.
He's doing what any writer wants to do or should do. Do I think knowing more about the Doctor, he should remain mysterious? I like knowing these little tidbits about him. I don't think he needs to be too mysterious.
Yeah, I get why they make him mysterious often. I mentioned that on my first contribution, that I mean, I hate it when they hide truth from us, but I understand it, because if they're going to make it last for another 50 years, they can't give away all the secrets at once, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And it brings back memories for me of, say, the 25th anniversary of Doctor Who, when we had Sylvester McCoy in the role, and they were trying to make the Doctor very mysterious and giving away, you know, little tidbits here and there, and people were having the same fears, actually, that, oh, are we learning too much about him? And in terms of territory marking, I've said this on the podcast as well, I think it's a showrunner's right to put into the show what he wants to do and to mould it in his own image. I think that's a showrunner's job. If they don't do that, they'd just be churning out bland episodes. You know, we'd just be spinning our wheels doing the same stuff year after year so as to not offend anyone. So whether people like it or not, I mean, everyone's got an opinion on everything, but at least he's doing something. So I can't fault him for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. I'm not going to put any blame or fault on that. No.
Okay.
Can we talk about the barn from Listen? I was surprised that they, talking about territory marking, I didn't think that part quite worked. What we've seen in the past, the barn and the surrounding, it's completely desolate. There's no remaining castle or house. And in this last scene of Listen, it's implied that there is a house nearby. So that didn't quite match up. How about this strange barn seems to last all the way to the end of, you know, the planet's time, but yet the rest of the house is nowhere to be seen. So that was strange. I'm not sure that new territory marking of the Doctor's story matched up. I was confused by that.
Yeah, no, that's a good point, actually. I guess we're meant to assume maybe the Daleks have blown up that part of the world, but why a wooden barn would stay there and other buildings wouldn't, I'm not sure.
Yeah, you don't know. I mean, these Time Lord people, I bet they have the ability to just move an entire house if they want, so maybe they had to move and they didn't need the barn.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
So maybe the War Doctor got a hammer and went out and, you know, reconstructed it or something.
Yeah, that too, yeah. Little construction work.
Yeah, look, to me, I think it might have been a Steve Moffat, George Lucas moment where he's thought, oh, I can tie this back into something else, and did it. You know, just like George Lucas would in each of his movies as he went on, he'd go, oh, now I can do this. And he'd write stuff in that you just know he hadn't thought of originally, and that he'd try and shoehorn into the story. I think it might have been a bit of a George Lucas moment there.
Yeah, it's cool, but... Yeah, clearly he.
I wonder if those two have ever met.
You think?
Probably. Maybe. That would be interesting to see those two meet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. George Lucas and Stephen Moffat. Well, I bet they'd be BFFs.
Maybe.
Absolutely.
I know Steven Spielberg is a fan of Doctor Who.
So is J.K. Rowling.
Oh, very much so, yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know whether Stephen has taken some DVDs over to George's house on a Saturday night and said, hey, George, let's watch these.
I totally did.
Yeah, in my imagination, they do at least. Alrighty, shall we move on to Time Heist?
Yeah.
Alrighty. Now, Time Heist. This episode also received generally positive reviews. Ben Lawrence, writing in The Telegraph, noted, "In a show that is sometimes rather burdened by the need to maintain clever story arcs, Time Heist was a standalone episode that allowed some breathing space." Den of Geek said, "It was a solid, fun episode of Doctor Who, not the best, but enjoyable. It came together well, and that it had enough in the tank to keep us happily entertained for 45 minutes. Writing for SFX, Nick Setchfield praised director Douglas McKinnon's visual flair, but said the episode, on the whole, was solid mid-tier Who, but not the smooth criminal it could have been. So, did we like it? Could it have been slicker? Should it have been longer? What do we think?"
I like this one.
Yeah. Yeah. I was sick when I saw the episode. I had this horrible stomach ache inexplicable stomach ache, and nothing bad happened, but I really wasn't feeling good when I saw this episode, and it got me through it. I was completely distracted and captivated that I had no idea I wasn't feeling well, and by the end I was like, oh, hey, I feel okay now. It was great. I appreciated it. I really was. I was into the episode. It was great.
Okay.
Doctor Who, it'll cure what ails ya.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
What did you like about it, Kate?
Like we established earlier, I like the fun episodes. So this one was really fun. And I think I tweeted something about how I really like heist. I like a good heist show, but except Ocean 11. I don't like those movies. But generally, I love just the whole concept of heist movies and TV shows like that, where they come together as a team to pull off this crazy heist. So I really liked it.
Mm-hmm. I was glad Doctor Who got to do one of those.
Okay.
Yeah.
And in terms of myself, I thought, like a lot of these reviewers were saying, it was just a good, solid, standalone episode. I mean, it didn't stand out to me as, like, genius or brilliant, but it was just nice to watch. It felt to me like a good weekly episode of Who.
Mm-hmm. It had a dimensional bomb. That was kind of genius.
That was cool.
Has somebody else done that before? Please let me know if they have.
Yeah, right into us, listeners. We don't know. But I thought that was very cool, too, because they're all turning away from it. They're all scared it's about to blow up. And then when it first went off, I thought, what's happened here? And then it was clear what had happened. I thought, very cool.
Mm-hmm. It was awesome.
Now, Sai and Sabra were two of the tag-along companions in this episode, I guess. Would they make good full-time companions, or at least allies like the Paternoster Gang? Might we see them come back?
I think it's possible.
Definitely.
But I'm not convinced it'll happen. I think that last part when we saw the doctor give the call me sign, I don't know if it was just Sai or both Sabra, I don't know. But I think that was just the doctor saying, hey, I should give my phone number out more often to people, maybe. That was my thinking. Who knows, though? I like them. I wouldn't mind if they come back.
Okay. Was Sabra, did she permanently lose her mutant powers?
Oh, good question.
Because I need to know that before I answer this question.
Well, she took the potion, I guess, and I assume that.
But is she able to control it now? Then,
you know what? It maybe there was quite a bit in that bottle. Maybe it's just something she has to take like once a month, and it's only kind of temporary, you know. And then, yeah. I hope that's it, because that would be sad, you know, to completely let go of that, right? I mean, she definitely wouldn't be of much help to the doctor
Exactly. If she can keep her mutant powers, and definitely, I think Sai would be a very useful companion with all of his technological advances. So I think that they would make really interesting, useful companions. And I really hope that we see either one or both of them back later.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, in my head, I can already think of some stories. You know, imagine Sai plugging himself into the TARDIS console and, you know, stealing secrets or something, and perhaps being not an entirely trustworthy companion.
Yeah.
You know, given his backstory, you know, he's done some dodgy things in his life. He could be an interesting sort of dodgy male companion along the lines of, you might not know this guy, but Turlo from the original series of Doctor Who.
I don't know that one. I haven't watched all of them.
No, that's okay.
Which doctor is he from?
Turlo was a alien posing as a schoolboy on Earth, and he was working for the Black Guardian. and he joined the TARDIS crew, but you never quite knew whether he was on side or not, and it was a really interesting companion.
Oh, well, I think we should have more of them. I wouldn't mind another one like that coming.
Cool. Now, yeah. Another question that comes to mind was the imagery in this episode a bit shocking for kids, like when the guy's head, or his brain, I guess, turned to soup, as they called it, and his whole head collapsed. What did you make of that?
Ugh. Gross. Soup tears? Tears of brain soup? That was disturbing.
Yeah. I don't think it was any more disturbing than just general Doctor Who.
Oh, really?
Because there's been some weird stuff that we've seen.
True.
Yeah.
True. I just get a feeling this series...
Like the adipose comes to mind.
Oh, well, yeah, that were pretty gross.
Oh, yeah, that was actually nasty than you'd ever... You have to think about it a little bit because those adipose babies are so cute, but good point.
And now you see people at conventions running around with adipose plushies and you think, do you know what you're holding there? The reason I threw this question in is, I guess, I have a feeling Stephen Moffat, I don't know whether Capaldi's gone up to him and said, hey, let's make it a bit more scary for the kids this time, like, you know, the good old days. I just feel there have been some scarier moments in this series, and we'll get to another one in the next episode as well that I'll highlight. I've just had that sense watching it that there has been a few things that haven't been entirely kid-friendly.
I don't know. It's hard to say. I feel like kids are exposed to so much, awful stuff that we should be hiding from them. They're just exposed to it all. So I don't know what's... I've lost my... boundaries. I don't know what they should or shouldn't be seeing. It's hard to put myself in it, my place in that, but I think if I were to have a kid, I probably wouldn't care that much. From a soup brain standpoint, I don't think I'd care that much. Hey, I don't know. It's good for a kid to get scared, right?
I think it is. I think it's healthy.
As long as it's not real. It's just a TV show. I don't know what to say.
Okay. Now, some might say that Listen was a bit like the season or series 7 story Hyde, but I think this was a bit more like Hyde, with this creature who could hide very well, and in the end two creatures reunited and, you know, started a new life together. I felt this episode was a bit like Hyde. Did you make any comparisons to that when you were watching it to Hyde and the way the creatures were reunited in that and reunited in this?
I did, yeah. I definitely saw that. It's just, it's becoming something, you know, it's becoming part of his job description. The Doctor is supposed to do this. This is what he does. He brings creatures, lonely creatures, together.
Aw, it's so sweet. Yep.
It is.
Okay, so overall, what did we make of Time Heist? If we were giving it a rating, what would we give it?
It's hard to say because it's such a separate episode to the others. I mean... this kind of goes back to the last season. This was one of these episodes that could have been a movie in itself. And just because of that, I think it's not entirely comparable to other episodes. It was a good movie. It was a 10 out of 10 movie in my book. So I had no problems with this episode whatsoever.
I give it a 7.5.
Oh,
geez.
Is that 7.5 sonic screwdrivers, Kate? Okay. Moving on, The Caretaker. Now, this episode also received positive reviews. I think most of these episodes have this series in terms of the critics, which is good. Rich Beach of the Daily Mirror gave it 4 out of 5, calling it funny, lighthearted, and thoroughly entertaining. He praised Capaldi's comic timing. Simon Brew of Den of Geek said it was arguably one of the best of Series 8. He, too, praised the comedic elements of the episode and praised Gareth Roberts' storytelling skills. He praised Coleman and Anderson, calling them excellent and saying it was their best performance of the series. Matt Risley of IGN gave the episode a positive review, praising the characterization of Clara in the current series altogether. He called The Caretaker satisfying, despite the occasional slip into soap opera silliness. So, did we like it? Did we see a fun comedic episode here? Or did it get a bit silly? Was the monster a bit strange? Did it get a bit soap opera-ish? What are our top line thoughts on this episode?
I'm so sorry, but I did not like it. And you'll hear about it later in my review. I hated it. Well, I didn't hate it, but there are parts of it that I definitely hated.
Sorry.
Give us a taste of your review that's coming up later in the episode.
Okay. Well, the soap opera aspect. I think Clara was just completely spaztastic. And Danny and the Doctor, too. They have these huge prejudices, it seems, both of them. And it's just so simple-minded, and not why I watch Doctor Who. I couldn't take it. I'm just not interested in that kind of soap opera stuff. Mm-hmm. And there is too much of it. But hey, there were aspects of it, and I do give it some credit. So, all right? Kate, what did you think?
I liked it. I thought it had some really funny parts. I liked the part, the Matt Smith lookalike was pretty hilarious. And Courtney, it was so funny to see more of her in this one.
Yeah, it's an interesting, it's an interesting one. I liked it on the whole, but I can see bits that are a bit silly. And I guess the soap opera-ish elements, I've heard people on other podcasts saying, I've got friends who are getting into the show because of that soap opera element, and I think that's very dangerous because I don't think that's going to continue through Doctor Who. I don't think it will continue once Clara leaves the show, which is very soon, by all accounts.
Yeah.
I think they're going to get into a show, and then next season are like, oh, it's all different again. What happened? It's hard. It's hard when writers are trying to satisfy two different audiences, this soap opera-ish audience and the people who want to watch Doctor Who. So I get where you're coming from, Lex, completely. I probably liked it a little bit more than you, though.
Okay, good. I generally want people to like Doctor Who, so it's okay.
Okay. Now, what do we make of Clara trying to juggle her different lives? She's been doing it all through the series so far, because it really starts to fall apart here, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It sure did. She lost her mind.
Do you think it's a character flaw on her part that she's such a control freak or thinks that she can, you know, balance everything? And why is she trying to balance everything? Why doesn't she just go and, as I always say, have 100 ventures with the Doctor and then come back to Danny?
Yeah, that's what I was wondering.
It's hard to tell. Well, I don't know. Actually, it's been building up for a while, her going back and forth. But in terms of her breaking apart, sort of breaking down as a character, being a control freak, it's kind of been just this episode, so maybe we shouldn't be applying it to the whole grand scheme of things. I don't know. But she sure does show those signs.
Yeah, I guess I see it in earlier episodes when she tells the Doctor what to do and she takes control of situations. I see that as being a bit controlling, like maybe an Into the Dalek.
Yeah.
You know, what did we learn today, Doctor? No, Doctor, what did we learn today? You know, like being very assertive.
Yeah, it's not just this episode. It's all of them.
Kate, what did you make of it?
Yeah, like you were saying, I'm just curious why. Why can't she just be honest about things, and especially with Danny and the Doctor? It seems like she's lying to both, or at least up until this point, she's been lying to them. And just, it'll be interesting to see where this storyline goes. I think you were saying that in your review about something about that, about where it's going to end up.
I hope they do answer that question, why. I hope they give explanations and more depth to her character. They've got such an opportunity here, so let's hope it happens.
I agree. And I should say here, we're all recording this before the next episode of Doctor Who, Kill the Moon, so there might be more information. I believe it's a very Clara-centric episode, from everything I've been told and everything I've read. So we may actually learn a lot more about her, and by the time people hear this next Wednesday, they'll be saying, why are you saying this? We've learned blah, blah, and blah. Well, it's because we haven't seen Kill the Moon yet, so apologies for that.
So close to finding out.
We are, we're very close, but it just hasn't screened yet. Okay, now, what did we make of Danny in this episode when he flipped out? The Doctor referred to himself as a Time Lord, and Danny's like, oh, you're a Time Lord. Oh, yes, sir. No, sir. You know, and just started behaving, in my opinion, like an absolute peanut. But what did you make of it?
I think that was an example of Danny having some of his own prejudices himself, just as bad as the Doctor. I mean, that was immediate. He went right off the bat into this whole spiel against officers, I guess, or just his type.
Yeah. I thought it was pretty weird.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sorry. Are you still talking?
No.
Freaking, I can't. Okay. So I thought it was weird the whole interaction, but, you know, the immediate reaction that he had to him saying that he was a Time Lord, is he familiar with Time Lords? Why does he feel that way?
Yeah, I think it was more the title of Lord. He saw it as maybe aristocracy, upper class, maybe that kind of thing in the British sense.
Let's hope so. I don't know. Maybe he did know exactly what a Time Lord was. You don't know. And that somersault that he does at the end was suspiciously athletic. Well, for just a maths teacher. So who knows? Maybe he does know all about this space stuff.
That was the next question I jotted down here. You know, what do we make of that somersault? He's in street clothes. He doesn't have much of a runoff. And he does this ridiculous somersault. What did you think when you saw that?
I was actually too distracted by all the drama going on. So that went right under my radar. I didn't even notice that the somersault was extravagantly athletic until afterwards when you mentioned it. So, hey, that is suspicious. It was strange.
It was. Kate?
It was crazy. But yeah, I think you might be onto something with your X-Files super soldier comparison.
Yeah, that's something I threw out on Twitter for people who didn't see it. I was saying, you know, either this was just a really, really silly moment, like we're just meant to believe this regular guy can do this, or there's something more to him, and maybe he's a super soldier, to use this old X-Files story analogy, you know, these super soldiers who could do anything kind of thing.
I think you're right.
Yeah, I want to hope there's something to it, for the simple reason that just having it in there as something a regular guy could do was so unrealistic.
Mm-hmm.
But the question is, what is Danny? Where did he learn this? Is he part cyborg? Does he have very powerful mechanical legs? I don't know. You know?
Yeah.
Is he...
Yep.
Is he... Sorry.
If this isn't explained, you might want to consider lowering your rating, guys. This episode drives me crazy. They better turn that somersault into something, okay? Doctor Who angry fan right here.
Yeah, Lex, if they don't explain the somersault, I will remove one sonic screwdriver.
Thank you. Punishment must be paid.
That's right. So that's where we're at in the series at the moment. As we mentioned, we're all about to watch Kill the Moon in the next, you know, 24 hours. Where do we see this series going? Do we see it taking a darker turn? Do we see more comedy? Do we see Danny Pink's storyline coming out? Do we see Clara, you know, crash and burn? Do we see... Gosh, I don't know. What do you think we'll see, or what do you hope we'll see? I know it's a big question.
Well, this season has been so insightful compared to the other ones. I think it's going to be that again, going to carry on with maybe answer some of those questions that we brought up when we started this conversation. You know, about like why his face is the way he is, or and the Danny Pink and the Journey Blue relation. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to answer those questions and be insightful, and it's going to be fantastic because they're trying really hard this season. I just feel it. So it's going to be good. That's what I predict. Okay. Can't say much more.
And Kate?
What do I hope for? Just, you know, what Doctor Who is famous for is the excellent writing, good stories. So I'm hoping to see more good stories.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sorry. It's kind of vague.
No, that's okay.
But yeah, basically like what everything Lex said too.
What Lex said. Now, do we think Clara is heading for a big fall? Do we think she's going to have a tragic end in the show, or will she walk off hand in hand with Danny Pink at the end of it all?
Oh, yeah.
Let's make a prediction right
here. I vote tragic.
Tragic?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Predictions like
it's going to make us all ball our eyes out.
Probably, yeah. I don't want to think about it. I have to keep my happiness in a safe place. Yeah, probably it's going to be sad. And I mean, that's the only way that we'd let her go, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to be good, though. Probably she and Danny Pink will be walking off into the sunset somewhere. Hopefully not in the Promised Land. No.
What? And then they
that'd be sad.
Then they get hit by a bus, maybe.
Oh, a bus?
Yeah, a double-decker, London bus.
Way to go. Hey, that has happened in... No, wait, that was a van. I'm thinking of Amy's Choice. People get hit by cars once in a while. It does happen.
Do you think that would be very Moffat to have them walk off into the sunset and just as they reach the road, they get hit by a bus?
Oh, God. I could totally see that happening.
I'm terrible, I know.
Terrible! No.
Maybe you should be a writer.
see what happens when I have people to talk to on the podcast? All these weird thoughts come out.
I thought you cared about these characters.
I just have a funny feeling Clara's not going to have a good end. I just have a funny feeling. I've not been told anything. I just think that.
Yeah, it could happen. Yeah. Oh, dear. Poor Claire.
Alrighty, so if we were to sum up the first six episodes we've seen, my gut feeling is we liked all of them, except Lexi didn't like The Caretaker so much. So are we happy with this series so far, especially compared to Series 7, which I think was a bit, well, rubbish, if I'm being honest.
Well, I give it a thumbs up. Two thumbs up. And some toes. Yeah,
I give it two thumbs up.
Yeah, I'm feeling the same way. I'm really happy with this. I'm loving the new Doctor. That's not to say that I didn't not like Matt Smith. I thought Matt Smith was great. I just don't think he got good stories.
Yeah. I think maybe you said this at one point, that they were making all the episodes into movies, and that didn't work out all the time. But this one, it's well written. It really is. And they're trying hard. It's coming through, except for The Caretaker. But yeah, I'm pleased.
Yeah, there was that funny...
I really like...
Oh, go on.
Oh, I was just going to say, I have really been liking Capaldi. Matt Smith, he wasn't my favorite. But Capaldi, I think he, for the newer Doctors, he's quickly rising the ranks to number two.
Cool.
I think you guys know who's number one.
Eccleston.
Yeah. I think she's going with Tennant.
Right.
Yeah, I know she's going with Tennant. I'm just teasing.
All right.
Alrighty then. Well, look, thank you so much for joining me for
this
chat.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
I think it's been a good way to wrap up these first six episodes, and we'll do it again after the end of the season. I'm sure that will be a much different conversation.
Yeah, looking forward to that day.
Yeah, once we...
About 6 weeks, right?
Yeah, it's amazing. In 6 weeks, we'll know how this all pans out, and we'll be sitting here going, oh, and remember the time when I thought blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
Alrighty. Oh,
and it'll go by fast, I'm sure.
Oh, definitely. We're about to see the first of the six within the next 24 hours. It's
can't
all
believe
happening.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Lex, Kate, thank you again. And
thanks for having us.
Thank you, and I'm sure you out there will be hearing from all of us in due course in the weeks ahead.
Until next time.
Well, that wraps it up for another episode of Who Wars. If you'd like to be in touch with the show, simply email hello@whowars.net. Find us on Twitter @WhoWars, or if Facebook's more your thing, at facebook.com/WhoWars. Oh, and don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes. See you next time.
Oh no, Kate. Is she not there?
Kate?
Oh, I'm here. I'm here.
Oh, hang on. I've made a mistake already. Do we think this is going to go anywhere? Do we think Stephen Moffat... Start again. Listen received acclaim from TV critics and audiences alike, with many praising Moffat's... Ooh. We got some strange noise coming over there. Was that at your end?
It was a motorcycle.
Now, what do we make of Clara trying... Oh, wow. Kate, was that you again?
What?
there was this sound like a towel being dragged across the microphone.
Oh, a towel is very specific.
Oh, yes, I'm very specific.
Well, you always got to have your towel handy, you know?
Yeah, you were going to say that. I knew you were going to say that.
I liked it.
Mm-hmm. Loved it.